Welcome to the FemiPod. These are conversations about females for everyone to listen to, learn from, and engage with. Brought to you by your Femi founders, Esther Kewen, and myself, Lydia O'Donnell. Welcome back to the FemiPod for episode 108. I am here as always with Est, and this week we have an incredibly exciting guest all the way from the UK, the one and only Philly Bowden. Philly is a 2:29 marathoner, running coach and content creator. Philly has represented England and the UK on the global stage, but is also incredibly relatable to all runners of all abilities. We are excited about this chat today to dive into the behind the scenes of one of the biggest and best running personalities online.
Philly, welcome to the FemiPod. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. That was such a lovely intro as well.
We're so excited to chat to you. But firstly, congrats on your recent half marathon PB. We loved the race recap. How are you feeling now?
Good. Yeah, it seems like ages ago, actually. I feel like because I'm on a training camp currently in the French Pyrenees, time just becomes a completely different construct out here. And I'm like, oh yeah, I did that this year, even though it was like a few weeks ago. Now I'm feeling good, getting stuck into some more sort of 10K focused training now. So it definitely feels different, but it's good fun.
Wow, the French Pyrenees sounds very beautiful.
It's supposed to be, I mean, it is, the mountain backdrops are lovely, but the weather has turned on us and we had 7 centimeters of snow a couple of days ago. So I'm just trying to adapt.
Oh my gosh, that's hard. Yeah, I cannot imagine how cold that is. Anyway, let's go back way back to younger Philly. I think it's really interesting to understand like the impact sport had on you as a younger woman and, you know, how that's impacted you today.
Yeah, it was kind of my escape and energy outlet, I guess, as such a young kid, but I never really found I was searching for the one thing that I was really, really good at as a kid. And I never really kind of found it until I found running, and I loved running, but I was never kind of top of the class. I think my first national, I came like 100th, but I was doing like karate, basketball, netball, hockey, just all of the sports because I had a lot of energy and I wanted to do anything other than kind of being academic. Or I was a creative kid as well. I learned guitar and did kind of girl guiding and stuff. But yeah, I think it's how I kind of learned how to like make friends and socialize and just developed this very, very competitive nature that I still have today. And yeah, I think back of being a kid and a lot of it is sport and just having a lot of fun. So it's still has that little that energy today that I try and take into every day when you sometimes have to drag yourself out the door on the days you don't want to.
Yeah, it's super interesting thinking about the kids who grew up that really specialized into one sport and to see where they are now versus the kids who kind of just did everything and were like kind of good at everything, but maybe not great at anything. I definitely feel like a lot more elite athletes didn't specialize when they were super young. Like, what's your kind of take on that?
Yeah, I think for me, it was definitely a good thing that I didn't find like track and field and cross country. I mean, I did find it quite young. I think I was like 9 or 10 when I first did like the school's cross country, but I didn't then seek out or figure out like to join a club. I just did it once a year at school and then finished primary school, went to secondary school. And it wasn't until like 3 or 4 years later that I joined the after school cross country club. And the coach was like, you two should come down to the actual club and train. But I think that was a good thing because, I don't know, I see a lot of my peers around that time who were really, really good, but then kind of haven't lasted out to this age for whatever reason, whether it was kind of health, overtraining, or just kind of falling out of love with the sport from being too good at a young age that the pressure kind of made it not so fun. So I think, yeah, sometimes, although as a kid, you'd be like, no, I want to be the best. Sometimes being a little bit average can be a real blessing so that then you can work a little harder. And then when you get older, you reach that kind of level and you're sort of maybe more ready to deal with it, if that makes sense.
Well, it's obviously worked for you, and I definitely agree with you as well. I think learning like the tools to be, determined and hardworking and motivated, I think all of that is so important. I feel like if you find that too early, you kind of do just burn out. So, yeah, it's clearly working. But to go back to your running journey, you've obviously progressed into becoming an elite athlete, representing your country. And now you're completely sharing your training journey online with so many people. What is it exactly that you kind of want to share with the world?
I think just the experience of trying to be as good as I can in this sport from a female perspective specifically. I see a lot of men doing the same thing on YouTube, for example, and sharing their perspective and kind of sharing the behind the scenes, which is always kind of, I think, something that just interests people to see almost what you're not supposed to see because it's, when the vlog sort of evolved, it was this kind of peek behind someone's door to see what their life is like. And I suppose selfishly as well, it'll be really nice to look back on. And we've already done that from like some really good memories and good races where it's so nice to have this kind of 20-minute time capsule almost rather than just a few photos and a few videos. I'm useless at staying consistent with journaling. So I think of like decades' time where I can just look back and watch these videos, some of which have maybe like been romanticized. There have been a video where we've done been like, actually, we were in such a bad mood that day, but it doesn't look like that on the outset. So we'll just watch the video and think, oh, that was such a lovely time. Sometimes you have to edit out like some of the harder parts, but yeah. And I think a big part of that as well is perhaps inspiring and encouraging like a younger me to sort of see that very, I hope, like sort of real and raw side of what I share, because otherwise you sort of see the results of the people you look up to or people that are older than you and think that that's all there is. Whereas I try and share kind of the ups and downs and be very honest about, the stuff along the way that isn't perfect as well.
I love that. Yeah, it's like going really in depth versus like the Instagram, I don't know, fake life.
Highlight reel.
Yeah, the highlight reel, it's actually like true and real life. So yeah, I'm sure so many people appreciate it and relate to your story and what you share online. You also weave a lot of education about sustainable training into your content. What do you think is the most important thing for like a maybe a newer runner to understand about running in order for them to have a positive long-term relationship with running?
I think it's about remembering that before you can think about fine-tuning your sport and being consistent and being as fast as you can, for example, you have to remember that like the vessel you're using is your body for the rest of your life, and you have to treat it as so. And I just think a lot of the time we can think very short term about the next race or the next season, and really, if you take a step back, most people would say, I want to be running for as long as I physically can, or at least that's how I feel anyway. Perhaps I'm projecting. Some people are looking forward to retiring, but I want to be able to like lace up my trainers when, I'm old and wrinkly. And I think you have to remember that as well. But it also feeds into your performance being better, I think, because you can't just treat your body like it's sort of disposable and going to be, only there for the next race or the next season, because it might not even make it that far, with the kind of risk of injury and risk of your sort of your health deteriorating. It's not like racing driving where you actually have a car and you can just replace it. You can't, as my mum reminded me as a kid, you never get new teeth. Like it's the same for your body.
It's so true. I actually heard that analogy last week, like talking about if you had one car for the rest of your life, you wouldn't like fill it up with crappy fuel and just drive it until you can't drive it anymore. Like your body is essentially exactly the same and you need to like fuel it correctly and let it like rest and recover. All of those things are so important. Everything we talk about at FEMI is about like sustainable training, and we're definitely on the same page. We do want to run for the rest of our lives as long as we possibly can. So you're definitely speaking our language. But I just want to go back to what you were talking about before around like your authenticity in your content. And it feels like in the recent months, we've noticed this kind of like shift where it feels like you're becoming increasingly more yourself and letting your personality shine. and you're being very unapologetically you, which we love and is so good to see. We're just wondering, like, was there a particular moment that kind of drove this shift for you, or is this just like a natural evolution of you being a content creator online?
Yeah, I think it's a natural evolution. And I think when you first start out, the common kind of gripes and feelings are, oh, I hate the sound of my own voice when I hear it back from the microphone and watching myself. You have to get used to that when you're releasing something every week. Doesn't mean that I just love watching the fourth draft of a video of myself talking about something, but it's kind of getting over that and just those kind of cares or worries that are kind of from an insecure place about what people would think. Because when you really drill into them, I'm like, whose thoughts am I worried about? Is it anyone that like I would take advice from? No, why do I care? And just, I suppose, some positive feedback from a lot of people as well, that they appreciate seeing like the mess and like the authenticity. Like in the early days, we'd sort of spend an hour like tidying the room before we film, and now I'm like, no, this is real, this is how it is. And other people, otherwise are gonna feel bad that their surroundings don't look perfect all the time. I'm like, I'm just gonna own it and film like that. And it's not for everyone, and you still have to like filter out the negative kind of comments and the negative feedback. But again, like coming back to the kind of principle of, well, I wouldn't take advice from these people, I don't know these people, so why am I going to take their criticism? And also being quite comfortable and happy that like I'm not a bad person. Like if I have a bit of mess in the background or I'm being a little bit chaotic, that's okay. And like you say, just sort of embracing it. And I think it's definitely something that I like really wanted to have as a youngster, is like feeling really content and happy with who I am, and looking up to sort of probably women that are a lot older, sort of in their 40s and 50s, that are just unashamedly themselves, and just like you look at them and think they look really confident and just content in who they are, and I want to be like that. And I think it is something that you naturally kind of gravitate towards as you age.
Love that. Yeah, I remember watching that reel with your dirty laundry on Instagram, and I was reading the comments because I was like, holy shit, that's like me. Like I have dirty washing all the time. And yeah, I think it's really cool. And I think 99% of the world lives like that. And then, like you say, they may be cleaning up prior to, creating that content, and that's just not real life. So yeah, really appreciate it. You're really transparent about sharing your goals with your community as well. Does this openness also make room for like feelings of vulnerability because you're sharing what you're trying to achieve? And like, how do you grapple with this? Or does the support you receive from the community that, really support and want you to achieve those goals outweigh any negatives of that transparent approach around your goals?
Yeah, it's definitely gotten less scary. I think as it's become something that I just kind of feel not obligated to do, but I do enjoy sharing it, because I think when you can firstly have that vulnerability, but also kind of peel back the curtain a little bit and let people in on, I suppose, what sometimes people are, very rightly fearful of doing. Because if you have these very kind of challenging, scary goals, it's quite a high likelihood you're going to miss them. And I have done loads of times in the past. But I also know that they're very hard, stretching goals. So I can still sort of celebrate the B+ days where I get a little bit closer, fail in reaching that really scary goal, but know that in that failure, I'm actually closer because I've got more experience and, I've learned along the way. And I think that's a really important message to share with people as well. So I think that kind of keeps me going with it. Yeah, definitely. In the earlier days when I started perhaps putting that out there and kind of sharing some lofty kind of time-based goals, I was quite fearful that this might not come off, and then how am I going to deal with that? But you just learn as you go along. And I think relying and falling back on that kind of just being honest about how you feel about it, because again, like we're all pretty similar in that sense. It's probably a lot of people feeling the same way. And it's really, really rewarding when people kind of reflect that back at you, and it makes you kind of feel very human, which is nice. Yeah, I'd say the the positive energy I get from it outweighs the negative. You'll still get people that are kind of just cynical about it, but you know, that's okay.
I feel like I can relate to this so much, but I am definitely one that's more like worried to go out to the world and say, like, this is my goal, this is the time that I want to run, because of that fear of failure, you know. Like, I feel like that's so real for so many people, and I know so many of our community really also struggle with just like saying their goals out loud because they're so scared to not reach them. So like, massive kudos to you to like share that with the world and have that, I don't know, weight, what I would feel as weight on your shoulders to like live up to these expectations that you're setting yourself, but other people also put upon you as well. I think it's so strong and bold of you to come out and do that, because like, I'm kind of processing that myself. I'm running a marathon next weekend and I'm like, I don't really want to tell anybody the time that I want to go for, because I'm not trying to go for a PB. Yeah. It's quite a hard marathon. But I also am just scared if I say a time, then everyone else is going to expect me to hit that time. And if I don't, then I'm a failure.
I feel like there's also like an opposite effect here as well, because when, even when you say your goals out loud to yourself or to those around you, there's something that makes them more real. And whether that makes you kind of commit to them more or believe that they're possible more, that's pretty amazing as well. And I think, yeah, there's a lot of that kind of power and self-belief that if you can get to the point where you're brave enough to say it out loud, then being able to say it every day and other people knowing what you're going for and supporting you towards that can be pretty special as well.
Yeah, I agree. And I definitely think there's so much like power in the mind if you can say it and believe it yourself. And I also assume that if everyone else around you believes you can achieve it because you've said it, there's even more power. And I'm a little bit woo-woo, but I feel like, you know, bringing that energy can be like so powerful.
Definitely. Yeah.
And so just like another question here around that kind of like self-belief and sharing your goals. Do you work through all of that with your coach as well? Do you get a lot of confidence from what your coach is telling you?
It's a mixed one. I've recently changed coaches, so I'm still kind of figuring that out, having not kind of really gone into like a key race yet. And actually the last race I did was the first one with my new coach, and it was all about kind of taking the emphasis off time, which I really struggled with, because I am so like time oriented. And I think so many of us are, because we put so much weight on these arbitrary times, kind of getting under these kind of round number barriers. But I think that was really good for me as well, because actually switching the goal to something that I need to hone and need to be skilled at as an elite athlete, and actually racing those around me and then knowing that the time will come is kind of what we focused on. And in the past, I think it's more been kind of dictated by selection policies and the way that the sport is going in that direction, that we've then kind of gravitated towards goals that are both informed by that, but also by the training, and that we think I'm there. But it's less spoken about than you'd think, really, because you can talk a goal to death and kind of target this time, but really you could leave that until race week, because you've just got to get the work in. And there's kind of like an unspoken knowledge that, you know, we're working towards the best we can be anyway. So yeah, it's a little bit like, I don't know, imagine like other people at the top of their sport, like if you're going for Wimbledon or like winning a Grand Slam, like you're just working as hard as you can. So it's kind of at the back of your mind. But I think sometimes like talking about it too much can be a detriment as well, like in the day to day.
Totally. It's really hard as like an elite athlete who is, you know, constantly comparing stats and like chasing times and like seconds over distances and Ks and or miles, depending on what you run. but how do you manage like that relationship with failure? Because I don't know, 95% of the time you're not going to get the time, or you won't crack the PB that you want. Like, how has that developed over time for you, and how have you managed failing over the years?
Yeah, I mean, in big marathons, I go into, any marathon I go into, because it's such a big goal that you're sort of training for this one race for like 3 months. And other kind of key races, I'll always have like an A goal, a B goal, and a C goal. And there's a knowledge that the A goal is like, it's not meant to be a given. Like, you can't say that that's the one goal you're kind of going for. It's the headline because it's the most sort of shiny one. But seeing that like anywhere between the A and the B is still a B plus day, which is amazing. And usually the C goal is something that you genuinely will be able to say, I'd be satisfied walking away from the race with that, but not kind of ecstatic. And it's funny because the last two marathons I did were 2 seconds apart. Like, I ran a tiny 2 second PB in January in Houston, which is not what I trained for 8 months from the time that I'd ran previously. And the contrast with how I felt after both of those races, even though the performance is pretty much exactly the same on paper, was so different because back in May last year when I ran Copenhagen Marathon, it was my second marathon, I was coming in with only one experience, having run 2:34, and then to take 5 minutes off my PB, but miss my goal by like 30 seconds, I was ecstatic, and I negative split, and it was just this awesome experience. And then in January this year, I had the kind of opposite race where I positive split. I missed my goal by 3 minutes, but I still ran a tiny PB. I was disappointed, but in a way that was like in the background, like I was immediately proud of myself for getting the race done. And I think just finishing a marathon and showing up in the face of like really, really testing times, like being solo for like nearly half of the race, is also like something to be super proud of. And I kind of reached that point during the race, which I'm amazed at. And I think having worked on my sort of mental performance and working with a sports psychologist for a long time now is, you know, has a lot to say for that. And that I was probably at mile 20 and I knew that the goal had slipped away, but I was proud of myself how I was showing up already, even though if you'd have asked me the day before, this is the performance you're going to run, how are you going to feel, I'd have said, you know, I'd be absolutely gutted, like I'd probably cross the line and cry. But I was like laughing and joking and could sort of see it for what it was. And I think I needed to have that experience to learn about how I needed to run the race and maybe kind of start a bit more conservative than I thought I needed to. And, you know, loads of little learnings which, you know, you don't anticipate, but if you can let those in from a failure, then you're just gonna get so much from it.
Oh my gosh, yes. I feel like some of my most challenging races and actually like my DNFs in a marathon have actually been some of the most important races of my life, you know, like how much it's taught me. And also just watching an athlete's mindset shift as they like get older and go through their training and their racing like life and careers, so interesting to me, because it's just like it really shows how much stronger we get every opportunity and every experience we have, which is cool. And even just watching your race recap of the Berlin half marathon where you got 10th, which is incredible, and speaking to like how you are racing to race and not just racing to get like times, like I think that's also super interesting. Also something I probably struggle with, because I'm always just like, I want to run this time and don't actually go into races with a mindset most of the time, because I'm racing in Australia. Well, this was when I was racing on track in Australia against guns, and I'm like, I have no chance at placing in these races, so I just want to get a good time. But I've kind of like taken that mindset into my other races as well, my road races, where I probably should just be like racing. So watching your video, I was like, it's a good reminder to actually like have that race mindset more often.
Yeah, it's difficult because we always want to have that shining performance at the end, but you're not just out there to time trial, otherwise why would you be in a race, you know?
Yeah, we want to talk about menstrual cycles with you, and we briefly chatted about menstrual cycles and training to your periods before we jumped on the pod. But in Australia and New Zealand, we've kind of made a lot of progress around like talking about menstrual cycles and like the conversation of how our periods can affect us as female athletes is like becoming much more common, which is awesome. But we wanted to kind of understand what it is like over in the UK and if these conversations are happening over there.
Yeah, it's definitely been a building conversation, I'd say. And like, unfortunately, from a place of kind of hardship for a lot of athletes who like yourselves have experienced, you know, difficulty in their sort of younger careers that have then either stopped their careers as they've gotten older or really sort of hindered it. Some really big names that have, you know, not just experienced Red Est, but have, you know, become fully riddled with bone injuries and kind of osteoporosis in their 20s and having to kind of hang up their spikes for good in that sense. And I think that's a story that needs to be told, but we also need to like recognize that it's not just at the extreme end where people are kind of experiencing these really difficult journeys where they've even never had periods or lost their periods, and it's had that impact on their life and on their performance, but also like across the spectrum, like even if you're just under fueling a little bit or, you know, training faster and thinking that that is, you know, not detrimental for your hormone health, that there's so many issues that I think need uncovering. And there are some people talking about the science, but I think it needs to be in a way that is like super accessible to the every athlete, and especially the youngsters, because they have the opportunity to just do it right, you know, with this information and with it being kind of spoken about a little bit more widely now. I think it's a really exciting time to be a young athlete and to have that information sort of as readily at your fingertips as it has ever been.
Totally. Yeah, there's so much room for change, which is really exciting. And I just think about schooling and how much I learned about the menstrual cycle. And it was literally like, this is the menstrual cycle. Here's how you don't get pregnant. Okay, goodbye. Yeah, so it totally needs to be like a full sweep. And, you know, that's why we created Femi and created the Femi app. And I know there's other initiatives out there where people are really trying to get this education easily accessible to the world, which is awesome to see. How has your relationship with your cycle and your body evolved over the years?
I still feel like I am only just scratching the surface, like if that, in terms of being able to like train with my menstrual cycle and really learn about how it impacts my body, because currently I have kind of like a pseudo cycle because of the contraception that I'm on. I have the Marina coil, which means that like everything's kind of dulled down, but I have decided I'm definitely gonna go natural and get rid of that later this year, because I feel like I've thought about it for such a long time that I don't want to think about it any longer, where I just want to have that that kind of natural marker that I am healthy and that I'm not under fueling or overtraining. Because, you know, the minute that you lose your natural cycle, that's it's a red flag, but it's a really valuable warning sign to have. But also, like, I just feel like I've not really had the opportunity to learn how it impacts me in both a positive and a negative way. Because ever since I've kind of had periods, it's either been stop start, or I have had periods of amenorrhea, and you know that has been because of underfueling and overtraining, or the contraception I've been on has meant that like I don't even try to understand it because it's all confusing anyway. And I think that's another layer of like complication for people if they, you know, that is important to them. It's like you can get the information that helps you train as the best athlete, or you can go down the route of not wanting to have children yet and, you know, seeking contraception, and there's like no kind of overlap in the advice, which I think is really, really tricky.
Yeah, I mean, having your cycle as a marker and being able to understand your body is like so powerful as a woman. And we're kind of like often finding ourselves in these discussions between the tension of, one, the power of training, and then two, like the importance of listening to your body. And wearable technology and like lab testing can really help be really powerful tools to help us understand if we're improving or where we're at with our training. But on the other side, like, we really encourage learning about your body and understanding and listening to your body throughout training and training journeys as well, particularly as a woman. How do you kind of manage that tension between like training data and the science and then like actually how you feel?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I got an Oura ring after I came to France to train last year, because all the other girls I was training with had an Oura Ring, so I kind of I was influenced in real life, if you like, because they were all talking about their data, and I found it super interesting. And I do enjoy being able to track it, and I find it really helps with just sort of motivating me to get, you know, plenty of sleep, because that's one of the main things that I look at, and kind of tracking that over time. But it's, I think I use it more as sort of a warning sign for seeing whether I'm, you know, getting sick, but also like the information around like recovery is fascinating to me, like the resting heart rate data, and kind of obviously it gives you this kind of altogether readiness score for the day, which I got some really good advice from Izzy Bat Doyle, actually, to never look at that the morning of an important workout or the morning of a race, because she's like, Philly, it doesn't matter how ready you are, you're going to go and do it. And I think she was talking about when she was actually quite sick but didn't look at it because she was racing at the World Championships. She said she looked at her data afterwards, she was like, yeah, it validated my performance. It was really bad. But yeah, I remember like looking at it after a marathon when I kind of took a few days off and just didn't run. And my resting heart rate was the lowest I'd ever seen it. And it didn't make any sense to me because I'd just done this really hard performance. But it's amazing how just like the act of having a rest day or three rest days back to back, you know, we're kind of residually having to recover even from an easy run, that your heart rate is elevated. And I think that's so interesting to see, and just kind of like acknowledge that like we're doing hard things all the time. But I definitely think you can also get obsessed with it, which is the kind of the balance, and not letting it kind of dictate, because at the end of the day, you know how you feel as well. It's the same with the kind of athletes I coach when they perhaps obsess over like specific paces or specific heart rates in a workout, because you know, in a race, sometimes you might not have that information. The GPS is off, or you just don't have your watch. It's so important to tune into how you feel as well, because that's such a powerful measure that you can't get from any data, really.
So true. I totally relate to that. And Lydia and Tegan, who are both part of Femi, always laugh that I go from one to the other of like loving data and being like, yeah, let's go data. And then being like, never running with a watch again. And then I put my watch away. And then see me in a couple of months, I'm like, yeah, back to the data. But also that readiness score thing, it's so interesting you mentioned that as well, because I used to use Garmin back in the day, and it would give you like a performance readiness when you were warming up. And
yeah,
like sometimes it would say like plus one or plus two, and then once for a race it said negative five, and I did an 800 and it was shocking. And I honestly think that that influenced my mentality, because I looked at that and I felt a bit tired and I was like, oh crap, like here we go. So yeah, it must be really hard to balance that as such like an elite going to like high pressure moments as well. It's interesting.
Yeah, I definitely have to turn off the kind of live, like a notification style update on your condition. Any watch that I use, I just turn that straight off because it's not helpful. And I had some really good advice from a coach that didn't even coach me years ago, that was to never pay attention to how you feel in a warm-up, because guaranteed at some point in time you've had a really good workout or a really good race after feeling kind of crappy in the warm-up. So it yeah, it's there to kind of get that nastiness out of your legs, so it doesn't always feel good. So I always think about that.
Yeah, I agree with that. I've had some absolute blinder races when the warm-up's been shocking. So yeah, you never know how you're going to feel. We want to briefly touch on your amazing partner, Daniel, and also your teammate. For athletes like yourself, like people, the people around you are fundamental to your success, but you two obviously work together really closely as well. And the lines between work, relationship, training can get blurry. How do you manage this balance, like working together so much?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. We sometimes laugh because when I catch up with him when I'm away on a training camp and he's not here, we will try and sort of like designate a call to talk about work and kind of edits or brand deals and things that we're working on in tandem. And then a call to be just Billy and Daniel and kind of catch up and talk about anything that's not work. And we always end up talking about work, even if we don't realize we've gone there. And then we're sort of like, oh shoot, we need to not talk about this. No, we'll save that for later. It's difficult, but I think it's never a chore, and it's so much fun working together. And it it does come with its challenges, obviously, but I think we both motivate each other and we both make each other better at like our role within the business by just, you know, having that kind of sounding board, always having someone to kind of talk things through with. I suppose in this kind of world of work, you don't necessarily have colleagues other than each other. And I really admire people that do it on their own. But I think we have such a strength in having each other to kind of firstly provide the skills that we bring to the table, but also just to be able to do it together, because it's so much more fun. You know, when I go to a race or if I'm doing a workout and Daniel's there to film, I then don't have to stress about that, but he also brings like a new creative angle to it and will remember to kind of tell me to make sure I say something before the workout rather than just going into it and then we get back and think, oh, there's a bit missing from the video here. So yeah, it's really good, and I'm sure there will be more challenges up ahead. I don't want to like sort of look at it just with rose-tinted spectacles. It's going really well now, but no, we both really enjoy it.
Yeah, that's amazing to have someone like, yeah, another perspective on your side for all your content, and then also, yeah, you have someone that can personally film everything for you while you're out there racing or training your heart out. So that's awesome. We want to finish up with some quick fire questions for you. The first one being, if you could be the best athlete at any sport in the world, what would it be? It's kind of a funny one because you're obviously a runner, but what would you want to be the best in the world at?
Yeah, I think something that looks super difficult and skillful that I've never tried, maybe like snowboarding or something. I feel like I look at people doing that and just think that they're very cool.
I love that. Yeah, I was saying to Es before, like mine would definitely be surfing, because I think she just, well, we all just assumed that we'd hit running, but I feel like something really different would be so fun.
I also know that I'd be so bad at it, so just being able to like wave a magic wand and just be really good at it would be really cool.
That would be pretty good. And then the last one is, if you could go back and tell your younger self something, your say your 15-year-old self, what would you tell her?
Oh, I think to like worry less, probably. I think internally as a kid I worried about a lot, and that kind of perhaps weighed too much on like decisions I made and kind of like how I behaved, probably like in the light of wanting to please others, and it just, yeah, it never takes you down the right path.
I love that. Well, I listened to a podcast this morning and they were talking about people who find joy and how the most joyous people are people who have really found themselves and found their place in the world and can be their like true authentic selves. And I definitely feel like that is you. I feel like watching your content, there is just like so much joy in what you do, and you provide so many people with so much joy as well. So thank you so much for your content, for your time and energy that you give to the world, and for building the running community up as well. Like running at the moment is completely booming, and it is really because of people like yourself who are pushing the sport to the forefront. So yeah, massive thank you to you. And thank you so much for your time today. We'll be tagging Philly's YouTube and Instagram into our show notes. So go ahead, if you haven't already, which I'm sure you would have, but go and check it out. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can head to our Instagram at femi.co, or you can slide into me in Est's DMs. But thank you so much, Philly. You are amazing.
Thank you for having me. It's been fun chatting to you guys.
Thank you.